Good morning, everybody. Welcome, and it's a new year. Obviously, we haven't met for a while, and hope that the year should be a year of bracha and hatzlacha and good health, and b'ezrat Hashem, a year of geula and yeshua for Am Yisrael and really the entire world. I thought I would spend a few weeks talking about some aspects of Shemitah, the Shemitah year. I'm not necessarily going to go into every halachic detail, but to kind of go over some of the major questions of Shemitah, such as the Heter Mechira and the different types of issues there. But before we begin Shemitah, I actually want to go backwards a little bit, and even though it's already past this month, and speak about a very, very interesting halachic issue that pertains to Simchas Torah or Shmini Atzeres. Again, in Eretz Yisrael, Simchas Torah and Shmini Atzeres are the same day. In Chutz La'aretz, it's two different days. And this is really a question that Tosfos asks. We know that every time on Shabbos and on Yom Tov, when you have a Kriyas HaTorah, you have a Haftorah, a passage from the prophets that is connected to either the Parsha or to the Yom Tov and the like. When I was young and I first heard the term Haftorah, so I figured something out. I said a good word. I said, oh, the reason why it's called Haftorah is because the prophets are less holy than the Torah. So it's the Haftorah, it's like Haftorah. You got Torah and you have Haftorah. And that's the source of the word Haftorah. Again, I thought that was very, very brilliant. But when I came to Havdalah, I didn't have an answer for that one. Havdalah sounded to me like half dollar, and I wasn't really sure what the dollar was. Why would Kiddush be called a dollar? So as a result, I had to come up with other explanations. Now, just for a moment, what is the origin of Haftorah? Why do we read Haftorah? So the Gemara explains that originally there was only Kriyas HaTorah. We read the Torah. That goes back to actually Moshe Rabbeinu, to read the Torah on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. And Ezra added the requirement of reading the Torah Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos Mincha. And there was no Haftorah. But during the reign of Antiochus and some of the later kings that were persecuting the Jewish people under Greek occupation, so we know that there were many things they didn't allow. They didn't allow kashrus, Shabbos, and Rosh Chodesh. They did allow davening to some degree, but they did not allow the public reading of the Torah. They would actually post guards in the shul to be sure that no Sefer Torah was taken out and read. So as a result, the Chachamim at the time enacted that in lieu of Kriyas HaTorah, we will at least read from the prophetic books something that is connected to the Parsha. And that way, we will have some type of vicarious fulfillment of Kriyas HaTorah. So originally, the Haftorah was not read together with the Torah reading. The Haftorah was read as a substitute for Kriyas HaTorah. And in fact, that's why there's actually a halacha, although there are some exceptions, that a Haftorah has to have at least 21 verses. And the reason is, because on Shabbos, we have seven aliyahs, and the minimum size of an aliyah is three psukim. And therefore, the minimum size of a Kriyas HaTorah would be 21 psukim. And which means actually, that's another interesting idea, which means you actually don't have to finish the Parsha. That's really our minute. I'll get to that. You have to read 21 psukim from the Torah and have seven aliyahs doing that. The division of the Parshiot will come a little later, and I'll talk about that. But since the Haftorah is a substitute or a surrogate for Kriyas HaTorah, that is why it had to be 21 verses. So originally, the Takana of Haftorah was to replace Kriyas HaTorah at a time when we were not permitted to read the Torah. Later, when the Hashmonaim liberated ourselves from the rule of Yavan, so we were once again able to read the Torah, But the Chachamim thought, hey, this prophetic thing is a good idea because you're augmenting the message of the Kriya with a message from the Nevi'im, and therefore it was a good idea to be Mechaber, the Torah and the Nevi'im. People need to have respect for Haftorah. And Baruch Hashem, in Eretz Yisrael, I don't think this has spread that much. But in the United States, among particularly more modern Orthodox synagogues, there's a phenomenon called the Kiddush Club, where people simply leave the shul during the Haftorah, and of course the rabbi's drasha, which is also not so great. And they drink. Basically, they make Kiddush, and they drink scotch and vodka and the like. And you know, if you check the OU's own website, you'll see the OU has made various statements against Kiddush clubs in terms of alcohol abuse, in terms of being a bad role model for children, in terms of missing davening. But a lot of people think, oh, the Haftarah is just an optional little thing, when in fact the Haftarah is very, very, very cautious and the like. So that is the idea of the Haftarah. Now, if you look at any Chumash, you will see that there's a wide variety of choices for Haftarah. So for example, you look for any given Parsha, and you'll see Ashkenazim do this, and Sfardim do this, and Yekis do this, and Taimonim do this, and Italians, there used to be a big kahila of Jews in Italy in the Middle Ages, Italkim do this, Germans do this, and the like. And that is because, for the most part, Chazal did not tell us what Haftiris we have to read. The only requirement is that the Haftira have a connection to either the Parsha or the Chag. And it was left to every community to choose the Haftarah. And as long as you have 21 verses, even where to end the Haftarah. That's why you'll find, for example, even at the last Shabbos, Parshas Bereishis, you will find that Sfardim and Ashkenazim both have the same Haftarah, but the Sfardim ended earlier. Usually Sfardim have a shorter Haftarah for whatever reason. So the Chachamim neither dictated the choice of which Haftarah, nor did they tell you exactly where you have to end it. In other words, the only requirement is that it be connected to the Parsha. Therefore, different minhagim were allowed to exist. There are, however, some exceptions. There are, however, places where the Gemara itself tells you what the Haftiris have to be. And where the Gemara itself tells you what the Haftiris have to be, you're not going to have disagreement. One example, which we finished before Rosh Hashanah, are the seven Haftiris of comfort, the Shiva Denechemta, the seven Haftiris of comfort that we read from Shabbos Nachamu after Tisha B'Av until the Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah. Those are mandated. So here's a very interesting question. The Gemara says in Maseches Megillah that the Haftarah for Shmini Atzeres Simchas Torah, meaning even in Eretz Yisrael, which is one day, is the Haftarah about Shlomo HaMelech blessing the people on the last day of the dedication of the first Beis HaMikdash and sending them home. Again, just to remind you, in the book of Malachim, we are told that when Shlomo HaMelech built or completed the first Beis HaMikdash, there was a dedication ceremony of 14 days of celebration, of eating and drinking, of special korbanos. And the 14th day ended on Shmini Atzeres, when he blessed, the Melech blessed Am Yisrael, and they were all sent home. Now let's think about this a little bit. This is very, very significant, actually. The Gemara points this out. If Shmini Atzeres was the 14th day of the Chanukah Tabayit, and for all 14 days there was celebration, that actually included Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is in the middle of that 14-day period. Go backwards from Shmini Atzeres. Go backwards 14 days. Yom Kippur will be right in the middle. And the Gemara actually tells us that for the Chanukah Habayit of Shlomo, They actually ate and drank even on Yom Kippur. This was what was called a prophetic hora'at sha'a, meaning a prophet cannot abrogate a mitzvah. A prophet cannot tell you from now on, we'll keep Shabbos on Sunday. That's why we're not makabel yashka anybody else, because even if they could do miracles like a prophet, but the Torah is unchangeable. Nevertheless, a Navi does have the koach al pi Hashem to temporarily suspend a mitzvah of the Torah. The classic example is when Eliyahu HaNavi is combating the false prophets of the Baal, and he built an altar, he built a mizbeach at Mount Carmel, and he called upon Hashem that fire should come down from heaven. Now the emes is, when Eliyahu HaNavi lives, there's already a Beis HaMikdash. And when there's a Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to bring korbanos outside of the Beis HaMikdash. That is called Shechut Eichutz, slaughtering a korban outside of the Mikdash, or Halah Bachutz, being makriv a korban outside of the Mikdash. That's an Isur D'Oraisa. That's a Chi of Karis. How could Eliyahu HaNavi bring a korban, Mount Carmel, up in Haifa, when there's a Beis HaMikdash? And the answer is, it was a one-time event for Kiddush Hashem. That is called Hora'at Sha'ah. Hora'at Sha'ah, it would be permitted. So the Gemara says, the same way Eliyahu Bahara Karma was able to abrogate a mitzvah on a temporary one-time basis, because that's called Hora'at Sha'ah, that is exactly what Shlomo HaMelech did during the 14 days of dedication for the first Beis HaMikdash, double, by the way, of the Mishkan. The Mishkan was dedicated over 7 days. The Bayit Rishon was dedicated over 14 days. And that year, they actually ate and drank on Yom Kippur itself. Amazing. Now, again, be sure you understand me. I don't mean to say that Shlomo could just do this on his own. This came through Nevuah. Now, I don't know if the Nevuah was to Shlomo, who's a Navi, or the Nevuah was to Nasan HaNavi, or some of the other Nevi'im who communicated to Shlomo. But be it as it may, there was a Horasha. Okay. So going back to the Haftarah. So the Haftarah that the Gemara says should be read on Shemini Atzeres, Simchas Torah, is the Haftarah of Shlomo HaMelech blessing the people. And the connection is very obvious. Shlomo HaMelech blessed the people on the last day of dedication. That was Shemini Atzeres. That is why it is the Haftarah. Now, Tosos asks the question that is not our minhag. That is not the Haftarah we read on Shemini Atzeres, let's say in Eretz Yisrael. The Haftarah we read on Shemini Atzeres is the first chapter of Yehoshua, which talks about Moshe Rabbeinu died and Yeshua is the new leader and its transition. And Hashem says, I will be with you, Yehoshua, just as I was with Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazak v'yamatz, be strong and have courage and lead the people properly. Now, Bishlama in Chutz La'aretz, everything works out well. On Shemini Atzeres itself, we indeed read the Haftarah of Shlomo HaMelech giving a bracha. And on Simchas Torah, we have an extra day, and the Gemara doesn't say what to do with the extra day. So on that extra day, we read Yehoshua, because it talks about transition to the new generation and the like. But in Eretz Yisrael, where you don't have an extra day of Simchas Torah, all you have is Shemini Atzeres and Simchas Torah, and nevertheless, the Haftarah that we read is Yehoshua, right? As Hashem spoke to Yehoshua. So l'chaira, we are violating the express directive of the Gemara that the Haftarah of Shemini Atzeres is supposed to be the bracha of Shlomo HaMelech. Now, as I said, when it comes to other Haftarahs where the Gemara does not tell you what you have to read, so different kehilos can pick and choose. But this is a case where the Gemara gives us an explicit directive And if it gives us an explicit directive, then how are we free to do it? So Tosfos does not really answer the question, but Tosfos says that he heard, who is the he? That's another question. You know, the Balei HaTosfos were hundreds and hundreds of people. Sometimes the name of a particular person is mentioned, whether it's Rabbeinu Tam, which is Rashi's grandson, or the Ri, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, other Balei HaTosfos. Other times, a Tosfos is just a Tosfos, and we're not given the name of the author. So when I say he, I can't tell you who the he is. It's simply brought down in Tosfos and Megillah. By the way, that's why there's a klal. This is something for people who learn Tosfos to be aware of, that you cannot ask contradictions. Sometimes one Tosfos contradicts another Tosfos. And unless a name is given, like Rabbeinu Tam in both Tosfosim, you cannot ask a kasha from one Tosfos to another Tosfos, because the different ha'orot, the different observations of the Balei HaTosfos may come from different authors. Therefore, this might be one rabbi and that might be another rabbi. So therefore, there would not necessarily be a contradiction. But Tosfos suggests that he had heard that in the days of Rav Hai Gaon, the switch was made. Rav Hai Gaon was the last of the Gaonim around the year 1000. And he was also considered to be the greatest of the Gaonim. Rav Hai Gaon was extraordinarily great. And it is said that he was mitaken, that even in Eretz Yisrael, the Haftarah for Simchas Torah will be Yehoshua instead of the Gemara. It was a takana of Rav Hai Gaon. But the truth of the matter is, that does not answer the question. Because as great as Rav Hai Gaon was, the Gaonim themselves are bound by the rulings of the Gemara. And if the Gemara says you do one Haftarah, even Rav Hai Gaon wouldn't have Rishus automatically to be able to come up with a different Haftarah. So we have to understand exactly why is it that the Haftarah that we read on Simchas Torah does not follow the ruling of the Gemara. By the way, it's a very, very interesting, I'll tell you a little bit, I'll tell you two interesting digressions about the great Rav Hai Gaon. Rav Hai Gaon, of course, lived in Bavel. Bavel is modern-day Iraq. But one story is that it says that every Sukkos, I don't know if it was every year, but there were a number of years, he came to Eretz Yisrael on Hoshana Rabbah, or at least for Hoshana Rabbah, and he would make a great circuit, Hakafa, right? Hoshana Rabbah, we walk around seven times, and he would make hakafos with a large crowd of people around Har HaZeisim, around the Mount of Olives. Because if you recall the Haftarah of the first day of Sukkot, you will see that Mashiach will come from Har HaZeisim. He will come from that direction. The mountain will split, and there'll be a pathway, and in that pathway, Mashiach will come, and in a very mystical way, Rav Hai Gaon was also a Mekubal, in a very mystical way, the Hakafos break down the barriers that separate us from God, just like Yericho, when you walk around the wall, that causes the wall to collapse. Just like when a chassan walks around, I'm sorry, when a kala walks around the chassan, it's to break down the barriers. And this was a very mystical, very, very holy event that Rav Hai Gaon, the Gadol Hador, would come to Eretz Yisrael. And those days, by the way, even though Iraq may not be so far, the trip in those days was long and it was dangerous, it was hazardous. I don't know when he had to leave. Maybe he had to leave after Yom Kippur or whatever it would be. So that's one maisa about Rav Hai Gaon. Another maisa with Rav Hai Gaon that the Rishayim bring. Now, this may be apocryphal. I don't necessarily say I believe the story. That Rav Hai Gaon, who was once learning with his Talmidim, he was learning psukim in Tanakh. They were learning a book of the Nevi. And across the street from his yeshiva was a monastery, a Christian monastery. So at some point in the shir, the story goes, Rav Hai Gaon said to one of his Talmidim, why don't you go across the street and see how the priests understand this verse? Because in those days, the Galachim knew Hebrew. Many of them were born in Eretz Yisrael, they lived in Eretz Yisrael, and the like. So the Talmud was so flabbergasted that Rav Hai Gaon was asking him to check with the Goyim and go to the monastery, that the Talmud was literally paralyzed. He was frozen. He didn't know what to do. Was Rav Hai Gaon joking? What did he mean? And Rav Hai Gaon was very stern. He said to him, what do you think? You can't learn from Goyim? You can't learn from other people? Kabel es ha-emes mimi shi'amro. Be makabel the truth from whoever gives you the truth. And if they know the Hebrew language and they know grammar and the like, then what they say may have some meaning. Now, again, as I say, I'm not sure that this story is true, but it is brought in a number of mefarshim, like the Abarbanel, to illustrate the idea that a person should be willing to look at all sorts of sources. The Abarbanel himself, in his great commentaries, the Abarbanel, of course, lived 400 years later, in the 1400s, 1500s. The Abarbanel himself does quote Christian commentators. He often argues with them, but he uses them as well. And the Ibn Ezra will quote Karaim. Now the Karaim did not believe in the oral law. They did not believe in the Mishnah, the Gemara. But as a result, the Karaim, the Karaites, became very, very proficient in Hebrew grammar and in Tanakh. Maybe a lot of their explanations might be incorrect. But they became very, very accurate because that was the focus of their study. They did not study Torah Shebaal Peh. So as a result, we actually do find in the Ibn Ezra and the Abarbanel that Karaite writings were consulted on various grammatical points, and they bring this story of Rav Hai Gaon to illustrate that that's appropriate. Now, again, I'm not giving you any psak on this because this is also reminiscent a little bit of Rabbi Meir. Right? The Gemara tells us Rabbi Meir's Rebbe was Elisha ben Abuya. And Elisha ben Abuya became an apikiris. He became a kaifer. But Rabbi Meir continued to ask him halachic shailas and to learn Torah from him. And by the way, I've always thought this was Elisha ben Abuya's credit, that even though he became a rebel, he did not encourage Rabbi Meir to follow his ways. And in fact, the Gemara has a story that Elisha ben Abuya was riding a horse on Yom Kippur that fell on Shabbos, and he was eating a sandwich, and Rabbi Meir was following him on foot, asking him shailas. And when they got to a certain point, Elisha ben Abuya told Rabbi Meir, you can't go any further because this is your techum, right? You can't walk more than 2,000 amos beyond the city. Elisha ben Abuya, again, you can, as long as the houses are continuous, it's fine. But once you've left the city and there are no houses, you have a techum of only 2,000 amos that applies to Shabbos and Yom Tov and certainly Yom Kippur. And he actually told Rabbi Meir, you have to go back because of the techum. To me, that's a very, very unusual quality, that the apikores doesn't try to make other people apikorsim, but he wants Rabbi Meir to keep the mitzvah. But be it as it may, Rabbi Meir continued to learn Torah from Acher. And when the Gemara says, the Gemara raises the question, how could Rabbi Meir learn from Acher? He's a kofer and apikores. And Rabbi Meir's own answer was that my Rebbe is like a pomegranate that has an inedible rind and edible seeds. I throw away the shell and I eat the seeds. Or another metaphor is exactly the opposite. It's like a peach with a pit. I throw away the pit and I eat the fruit. Interesting. In one metaphor, the good is on the inside, the bad is on the outside. In the other metaphor, the good is on the outside, like the peach, and the bad is on the inside. One can think about what the significance of those two metaphors, but that was Rav Meir's justification. And essentially, this goes back to the idea of Kabel ha-emetz mimi she'amro. Now, whether you would apply that today is a whole other question, because many of us are not capable of necessarily discerning what is emes and what is sheker. So it may very well be that a great university scholar of Jewish studies may have very profound and significant insights that are emes and worthy of thinking about and learning, but at the same time, it may be intermixed with Gefira, Apikorsis, denigrations of Yiddishkeit. And if Rabbi Meir could say, I could separate the good from the bad, you know, that might be Rabbi Meir. That's not necessarily us. So as a result, you have to proceed with caution. The notion that, oh, I could look up a Christian Bible interpretation and get some good explanations. And theoretically, that might be true. But you understand that there are also dangers and risks. By the way, not just Christians, even Jewish, many Jewish books also raise some difficulties and the like. So those are two little stories about Rav Haggai. Okay. But again, let's go back to the main question. And the main question is, what is the halachic justification for our changing the Haftarah from that which is mandated in the Gemara? So let me give you a Gevaldige answer, a beautiful, beautiful answer from the Or Sameach, Rav Meir Simcha, in his book on Chumash, the Meshech Chachma. And he makes a very interesting observation. All of us know that the main thing we do on Simchas Torah, Shmini Atzeres, is we finish the Torah. And our minog is that we finish the Torah every year. And the day that we finish the Torah is on Simchas Torah, right? We begin Bereishis, the Shabbos after Sukkot, after Simchas Torah, Shabbos Bereishis. Again, there's a minhag to also start it on Simchas Torah, but that itself is only a minhag. Reading Bereishis on Simchas Torah is absolutely not from the Gemara. That's a later minhag. That's in order that to show that even after we finish, we want to start again, that's fine. But the Parsha of Bereishis is, of course, the Shabbos afterwards. And the year works from, so it goes beyond Rosh Hashanah, right? So actually, we don't do it within the calendar year. But we start Parshas Bereishis, and we end Parshas Vayisa Brach on Simchas Torah. But the thing you have to know is, it was not always the case that the Torah was finished on Simchas Torah. That was not always the case. And the reason that is so is that the Gemara itself records two different minhagim regarding Kriyas HaTorah. The original minhag of Eretz Yisrael was that the Torah was completed in a three-year cycle. It actually may have been a little longer than 3 years. Some want to say twice in a Shemitah. That means over 7 years, which would be a 3.5-year cycle. You finished the Torah twice. Now, that would mean, for example, what does that mean practically? Let's take Parshas Bereishis, right? So last Shabbos, we read Parshas Bereishis. If you were working under the original 3-year cycle of Eretz Yisrael. So more or less, it's a little complicated because people have difficulty reconstructing the 3-year cycle. But more or less, you would read Bereishis over 3 weeks. You would read a third of the Parsha week one, a third of the Parsha week two, and you would finish the Parsha week three, and the same thing for Noach and the like, and interspersed with the Yomim Tovim, Kriya and the like. In other words, it was a 3-year cycle, or as I say, some say 3.5-year cycle. Now, you understand that number one, if you're operating on a 3-year cycle, then you didn't finish the Torah every Simchas Torah. And not only that, but even when you finished the Torah, it didn't necessarily come out on Simchas Torah. In fact, some say, again, as I say, there's a lot of uncertainty how to reconstruct the 3-year cycle of Kriyas HaTorah. And again, we don't even know if it's 3 years or 3.5 years. But some say it was arranged so that every third Shavuot you would finish the Torah. That Shavuot, which is actually a fairly logical choice, was the day of Siyum HaTorah. So this was the original minhag in Eretz Yisrael. Now, as I say, in terms of absolute bedrock halacha, there was no requirement that you have to read the Torah completely in a year. I told you before that Kriyas HaTorah requires that each Olah has three verses. Theoretically, one could be, I'd say, Kriyas HaTorah by reading 21 verses. And if you read only 21 verses, then indeed it would take around 10 years to finish the Torah. But be it as it may, there was no particular time frame. And the minhag of Eretz Yisrael was 3 years, or 3.5 years, depending. And therefore, Simchas Torah, or Shmini Atzeres, was not the day of Siyum HaTorah. And presumably, by the way, it didn't even have the name Simchas Torah, because it was not the day that you finished the Torah. Now, the Gemara tells us, however, that the minhag of Bavel was our minhag, that the Torah was divided into 52 or whatever parshiyot, and there was an annual completion of the Kriyas HaTorah, and Chazal were Taveya that the Siyum would be on Simchas Torah, on Shemini Atzeres, even though it's not a Shabbos. Remember, Zeis HaBracha is never, unless Simchas Torah falls out on Shabbos, Zeis HaBracha is never read on Shabbos, right? It's the only Parsha that is not connected to a Shabbos. Which means the idea that Shmini Atzeres becomes Simchat Torah is only a result of the Minhag Bavel. It was not the original Minhag of Eretz Yisrael. Now, what happened in time was that the minhag of Eretz Yisrael became extinct. It became extinguished, even in Eretz Yisrael. That the Babylonian minhag became not only dominant, it became exclusive. And this was very early. By the time the Gemara was written already, the minhag of Eretz Yisrael was virtually extinct. Now, it's fascinating that the Rambam was very adamant about this. The Rambam lived, again, many years later. The Rambam lived in the 1100s, 1200s. And the Rambam lived in Cairo. And the Jewish part of Cairo was known as Fustat. That's why it always says Fustat. And the Rambam also had a shul. The Rambam was a Rav in addition to everything else. By the way, it's very interesting. As Rav, Rambam enacted certain minhagim which he did not incorporate in his halachic book. And that is, the Rambam abrogated Chazara Sashatz for Shabbos Musaf. He made it a Hecha Kedusha, meaning to say, he instructed the Chazan in the shul to only say the first three brachos and Kedusha, and then people would daven silently, and there was no repetition of the Shmona Esrei of Shabbos Musaf. And the Rambam did this for a reason, and this reason is a very contemporary reason, unfortunately. He said that there was too much talking during Musaf, and people weren't listening, and they were getting ready to leave and make Kiddush and eat. And therefore, he abrogated Chazaras Hashatz, except for the first three blessings and Kedusha, in order to avoid all of the talking and the like. Now, interestingly enough, he does not give this psach in the Mishneh Torah, but I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it is the case that many Teimanim in Yanim, and the Teimanim were really, really followers of the Rambam, even in the Rambam's lifetime. They followed the Rambam blindly, and they followed the Rambam over the Shulchan Aruch, which most Kehilas do not. And I believe the Teimanim on Shabbos, maybe someone could correct me, do the same thing. They do not say a full Chazaras Hashatz for the Shabbos of Musaf. I don't know about Yom Tov, maybe be the same thing. And that is based on this psak of the Rambam. So the Rambam was a Rav, in addition to being the Gadol Hador and a doctor and everything else. Now the Rambam writes that in his neighborhood, there was a shul of Israelis, B'nai Eretz Yisrael, who, whatever reason, left Eretz Yisrael because of the persecutions, and they moved to Fustat. And in their shul, they kept the three-year tradition alive, and they only read one-third of every parsha. And the Rambam thought that for some reason that got the Rambam extremely upset. He said, that's not the halacha. The minhag of Eretz Yisrael is batel umuvutal. And the Rambam actually fought strenuously to either close down that minyan or force them to go with the one-year cycle. So it's interesting. It's kind of like a fly trapped in amber. The minhag of the 3 years had long been disregarded, but there were still pockets of people who were holding on to that minhag. But I think after the Rambam's time, I think it's gone. By the way, Lahavdil, a million gazillion havdalos, the Reform movement, or some Reform synagogues, have a similar idea in which they read the Torah in a three-year cycle, but they do it differently. They don't do it minigar itself. What they do is they'll read one-third of Bereishis, and then next week, they'll do one-third of Noach, and then next week, one-third of Lech Lecha, and then in year two, they'll do the middle part of Bereishis. Now, that's not the way the three-year cycle worked. The three-year cycle did not mean a little bit of Bereishis, then a little bit of Noach, and a little bit of Lech Lecha. Rather, the three-year cycle meant you read Bereishis over 3 weeks, and then Noach over 3 weeks. Be it as it may, therefore, the Reform movement, although it claims that its custom is rooted in the minhag of Eretz Yisrael, in point of fact, it is not rooted that way. So we have these two different minhagim. We have the three-year minhag of Eretz Yisrael, and we have the one-year minhag of Bavel, which eventually became the halacha. Now, here is the Meshech Chachma's interesting change. The Gemara itself says Beferish that the Kriyas HaTaira of Shmini Atzeres Simchas Torah in Eretz Yisrael is Zeis HaBracha. So here is what Rav Meir Simcha says. All of us think it's Zeis HaBracha because we're going to finish the Torah. Says Rav Meir Simcha, that's not Emes. Even when you weren't going to finish the Torah, meaning, let's say you're in the first year. So the parsha that you read right before Sukkot may have been Shemos. The Yom Tov laning for Shmini Atzeres is V'zayis HaBracha. Meaning, the Yom Tov laning for Shmini Atzeres is Zayis HaBracha, even if that wasn't the time that you were finishing the Torah, because you're operating on a three-year cycle. So now the question is this. If I'm not finishing the Torah, I'm only holding by Parsha Shmos, Parshas Vayera, and now it's a Yom Tov, and the Yom Tov has its own special readings. That's whether it's a one-year cycle or a three-year cycle. Why would the special reading be Zeis HaBracha if I'm not finishing the Torah? So Rav Meir Simcha says, the connection of Zeis HaBracha when you weren't finishing the Torah is a different connection than when you are finishing the Torah, because it's a one-year cycle. When you weren't finishing the Torah, the reason why Zeis HaBracha was chosen was because of the theme of Bracha. What is Zeis HaBracha? Moshe Rabbeinu on the day of his death is giving a Bracha to Am Yisrael, identifying every Shevet except for Shimon, for whatever reason. And he talks about their uniqueness and their goodness and their qualities. And then he asks Hashem to bless all of Am Yisrael. In other words, Zayis HaBracha was chosen because at the end of the Yamim Nayrayim, at the end of Sukkot, at the end of all of the special spiritual days that we have, and we're about to resume ordinary life, we ask Hashem to bless us, to give us strength, to give us courage, to give us resilience, to take the lessons of the Yamim Nayrayim and Sukkot and bring them into ordinary life. We get a bracha from Hashem. So therefore, Zayis HaBracha was chosen not because we were finishing the Torah. I mean, maybe we finished Zayis HaBracha. We may have finished the Parsha. Be sure you understand me. But we weren't finishing the Torah in a three-year cycle. Year one, year whatever, you're up to Shmos, and year two, you're in Bamidbar. Even year three, you didn't finish Simchas Torah because you have to go with perhaps another year and a half. So when you didn't finish the Torah, the Shaychus of Zayis HaBracha to Shmini Atzeres is the theme of Bracha at the end of the Chagim. So says Rav Meir Simcha, if the theme of Zayis HaBracha is Bracha, when you're working with a three-year cycle, then logically, the Haftarah would also be Shlomo HaMelech giving us a bracha, because we complement the bracha of Moshe with the bracha of Shlomo, which is also Shmini Atzeres. So Rav Meir Simcha says, the statement of the Gemara that the appropriate Haftarah of Shmini Atzeres Simchas Torah is the bracha of Shlomo is referring to when we were operating on a three-year cycle and we weren't finishing the Torah. And the idea was the theme of bracha. But Rav Meir Simcha says, when the minhag of Bavel became dominant and we now finish the Torah on a one-year cycle, instead of a three-year cycle, and Chazal were kaiveya, that the Torah should be finished, meaning you read Hazinu the week before, and you're finishing the Torah, although we're still reading Zayis HaBracha, but it now acquires a different function. It now becomes not only a theme of Bracha, but a theme of Siyum and completion. In other words, the significance of Zayis HaBracha changed from the three-year cycle to the one-year cycle. Memela, once Zayis HaBracha is about transition, finishing, and starting something new, so quite logically, we think about Moshe Rabbeinu dying, and a new leader taking over. And in many, many ways, talk about big shoes to fill, right? The shoes of Moshe Rabbeinu were the largest shoes to be filled in the history of the world. And we need to know that just as we finished, we're now going to start with a new beginning. And in that new beginning, we have to have Chazak V'yamatz. So Rav Meir Simcha says that when Tosfos tells us that Rav Hai Gon made a takana that the Haftarah should be about Yehoshua, Tosfos does not mean that Rav Hai Gon is arguing with the Gemara. Rav Hai Gon does not have authority to argue with the Gemara. But what Tosfos means is Rav Hai Gon understood that the Gemara's choice of Haftarah was appropriate when you were working with a three-year cycle where the focus is bracha. But once you are working with a one-year cycle where the focus is completion and transition to a new stage, the Haftira of Yehoshua was the better choice. And therefore, that is what Tosfos means, that Rav Haigon was the one who understood that the Gemara's ruling was limited to the older minhag of the 3 years and should not be followed once you have the 1 year. Again, this is a tremendous, beautiful thought, but I want to add something to it. And that is, you know, Rav Meir Simcha, who died in 1926, was the Rav of a city in Latvia called Divinsk. Divinsk. And there were two Rabbanim in Latvia, and both of them were Gedolei Olam, Mamash. Rav Meir Simcha HaKohen was the Rav of the Misnagdim, of the non-Hasidim. And the Rav of the Hasidim was a very, very colorful guy, Rav Yosef Rosen, who was known as the Ragachever dog because he came from the town of Ragachev. And their personalities were so different. Rav Meir Simcha was very edel, quiet, gentle, kind, spoke in a whisper, very, very deferential to everybody. The Ragachever was stormy and turbulent. In fact, Rav Meir Simcha used to say about the Ragachever was such a genius. Rav Meir Simcha says, people say the Ragachever has a good memory because he remembers everything. Bavli, Yerushalmi, Tosefta. He says he doesn't have a good memory. He just learns everything every 30 days. He finishes everything every month. So anything he remembers, he learned within the past month. Actually, for us, that's a pretty good memory even that way, but that's what he said. So the Ragachever was tempestuous. You really wouldn't want to, argue with him, because he would bring hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of proofs. In fact, they even have a story. Actually, Chabad has a Messiah, by the way. The Ragachever was a Lubavitcher. Lubavitcher was actually a Lubavitcher Chassid. And Chabad has a Messiah. Again, I'm not sure if it's 100% true, that the last Rebbe got smicha from the Ragachever. He actually was ordained. The Ragachever died later than Rebbe Yosef. The Ragachever died in the 1930s. Again, it was before World War II. I'll tell you two quick stories about the Ragachever. They had such a different personality. It says Rav Aaron Cutler, who was already a great Rosh Hashiva, even as a young man, at 22-year-old, he was a great Rosh Hashiva in Kletsk. He wanted to talk to the Ragachever in learning, but he was afraid. Rav Aaron was afraid because the Ragachever cut everybody down. So Rav Aaron dressed like a businessman. And he said to Rav Aaron, I'm a businessman and I learn a little bit. The Ragachever is much more gentle to someone who's not a full-time Rosh Hashiva. And he said, I'd like to say some Torah to the Rebbe. So the Ragachever said, yeah, you could tell me stuff. And Rav Aaron gave his very complicated chidushim. And the Ragachever is reputedly to have remarked, you know, for a working man, you're not too bad. You're pretty good for a working man. That was the supreme compliment. If he identified himself as a Rosh Hashiva, he would be, even Rav Aaron might be in big trouble. The second story they tell is, there was a Rav who was a Talmud Chacham who came to the Ragachever and spoke in learning. And the Ragachever was very nice to him. The Ragachever said, oh, fine, Baruch Hashem. So the Rav said, I don't know why people are so scared. People say when a Talmud Chacham comes to you, you cut them down and the Talmud Chacham is afraid. But Baruch Hashem, you treated me very nicely. Why do people say that you treat Talmud Chachamim so roughly? So the Ragachever said, I do treat Talmud Chachamim very roughly. In other words, telling the guy, you're not even a Talmud Chacham, it's not even good for me to fight with you. So they were very, very different personalities. Rav Meir Simcha was soft and gentle. The Ragachever was stormy. But again, it wasn't, God forbid, it was not a meanness. It was, the Ragachever was so involved in learning. In fact, they even brought down that I think when he was sitting Shiva for his wife, he was learning. He was learning. Now, during Shiva, you're not supposed to learn except for things that about Avelos and the like. And he was learning. And when someone raised the question, you're not allowed to learn during Shiva, he simply said, it was actually based on a Yerushalmi. He didn't make it up. There is a Yerushalmi that says that for a person that if they don't learn, they'll just die. It's like pikuach nefesh. There is a concept that, again, there's no one today that we could apply this to. Even today, even Rav Chaim Kineski did not learn regular Gemara when he sat Shiva for his Rebbetzin. But the Rebbetzin kind of lived in a different world and the like. So be it as it may, again, and excuse the digressions, but I hope that they're of some interest. Be it as it may, the Rebbetzin and Rav Meir Simcha were very, very close friends. They loved each other. They spoke in learning with each other and the like. So interestingly enough, the Rebbetzin adds something to Rav Meir Simcha, but he did it independently. He wasn't referring to Rav Meir Simcha, but he said the same thought. Now, here is an interesting point I want to bring out. We know that on Simchas Torah, whether in Eretz Yisrael or Chutz Laretz, everybody gets an aliyah. When I say everybody, I mean all the men get aliyahs, sometimes even children. And the Torah is read over and over and over and over and over again to be sure everybody has an aliyah. So it's a little confusing to understand how many aliyahs are actually required on Simchas Torah. Let's imagine you didn't have a crowd, you didn't have a million people, you have to give aliyahs. How many aliyahs? Now we know that the normal Kriyas HaTorah of Yom Tov are five aliyahs, no, plus a maftir, right? Shabbos is seven, Yom Kippur is six, Yom Tov is five, Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh is four, and a regular Monday, Thursday, Shabbos Mincha is three. So the Kriyas HaTorah of Yom Tov is five aliyahs. Now, if you look in Parshas Zos HaBracha, you will find that Zos HaBracha is not divided as a whole into five aliyahs. Rather, the five aliyahs take you up to the aliyah of Chasan Torah, meaning Chasan Torah, the end of the Torah that talks about Moshe Rabbeinu's death, is not one of the five aliyahs. It would be the sixth aliyah, an extra aliyah. Why is that so? If Chazal say you have to read Parshas Zos HaBracha on Shmini Atzeres, or Simchas Torah, and if on Yom Tov you have to have five aliyahs, then Chasan Torah should be the fifth aliyah. Right? It's the end of the Torah. So here's what the Rebbetzin says. Originally, the part of the Torah dealing with Moshe Rabbeinu's death was not the original Kriyas HaTorah. Because when you were operating with the three-year cycle, Zos HaBracha was not the finishing of the Torah. You were reading it because of Bracha. Well, if you're reading it because of Bracha, there's no reason to read about the death of Moshe. You're not finishing the Torah. You're reading about a Bracha. So the first five aliyos are the blessings that were given to all the Shvatim. In other words, the Rebbetzin is saying, the addition of the part of Zos HaBracha that deals with the death of Moshe, which is after the five aliyos, was not part of the original reading of Zos HaBracha. It was added later when we moved from the three-year cycle to the one-year cycle. The three-year cycle, there was no Chasan Torah because you were not finished. That's a gewaldige ha'ora that the Rebbetzin is making, that the five aliyos of Yom Tov end before Chasan Torah. Now, I want to point out that that is indeed our minhag, that we read five aliyos before Chasan Torah. Kol Ha'Aharon will be the last aliyah. But I do want to point out that the Vilna Gaon does have a totally different structure for the Kriyas HaTorah. In fact, this is what the Vilna Gaon says. The Vilna Gaon says you read four aliyos before Chasan Torah, I'm sorry, you read three aliyos before Chasan Torah. Chasan Torah is number four, and Chasan Bereishis is number five. That's quite amazing. I understand why Chasan Torah will be one of the five, but to make Chasan Bereishis one of the five is in reality very, very amazing, because as I say, reading Bereishis on Simchas Torah is not from the Gemara at all. It was a much, much later minhag. So to fold it in to one of the obligatory aliyos is actually a big chiddush. But that's the shita of the Gra, which is really not, I'm not aware, I mean, I'm sure there are some places that follow it, but it's certainly not the common minhag, where three, the brachos of the Shvatim are three aliyos. Chasan Torah is aliyah number four. Chasan Bereishis is aliyah number five. And then you have your regular maftir from Parshas Pinchas. But the Ragachavar is referring to the standard minhag, where the brachos of the Shvatim are five aliyos, and Chasan Torah is a sixth aliyah. Yom Tov requires five aliyos, and Yom Tov requires Zayis HaBracha, says the Ragachavar, that the original Zayis HaBracha only read the brachos, and therefore the brachos are divided into five aliyos, and this the rest was added later, when we went from a three-year cycle to a one-year cycle. Now, it's interesting, the Ragachavar then adds one final point to this. And the Ragachavar says, the Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that the last verses of the Torah dealing with Moshe Rabbeinu's death can be read by a yachid. And there are many, many, many interpretations. What do we mean, read by a yachid? And the Rambam says what that means is that if you had a minyan for the earlier part of the parsha, and then people walked out, and you don't have a minyan, you are allowed to read about the death of Moshe even without a minyan. Now that you continue, you read those pesukim. So the Ragachavar says, L'chaira, there's nothing special about that. That, in fact, is a regular halacha that applies for every Kriya Satayra. If we began Kriya Satayra with a minyan, and then we lost the minyan in the middle, we are allowed to finish. Baruch Hashem, that rarely happens, but that's the halacha. So the Ragachavar says, if there's a general rule that when you start with a minyan, you can finish without a minyan, why does the Gemara make a special point of such a leniency in connection with Moshe Rabbeinu? Those psukim. So says the Ragachavar, you're right. The general halacha taka is you start with a minyan, you can finish without a minyan. But I might have thought that since the original Kriya Satayra of Zayis HaBracha was only five aliyas, and Moshe Rabbeinu's Petira was added later, I might have treated that as a new Kriya Satayra. And as a new Kriya Satayra, you're not allowed to start it without a minyan. Kamash Malan, that we consider it a Hemshech, that even though it was added later, it is a hemshech, and therefore you apply the normal halacha. So that's the Ragachavar's mahalach. And as I say, it fits very nicely with the meshech chachma. So again, I apologize for the digression. I hope, again, it was interesting. Yemitz Hashem, next week we will be learning about Shemitah. And again, it may take 3, 4, 5 weeks in which we go over that. That'll be the next topic. So again, I wish you all a Chodesh Tov and a Shana Tov Misuka, a good year, a healthy year, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we should be able to meet in person very soon. Kol Tov.